Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Neil Slade. Two-part program tonight. Next hour, we take telephone calls from the dead. Yes, we are. We're going live to the United Kingdom. So we'll be back in a moment. Your calls, more with Neil Slade on Coast to Coast AM. Neil, before we take calls, you were talking about the amygdala and the fact that it is this pleasure section of the brain. I'll let you elaborate on that.
Well, you know, what I did this year is I talked to 56 people throughout the world. And these were people in all different fields. You were one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to people who are associated with some very remarkable psychic phenomena, such as I mentioned Robert Vandenbroek. I talked to Dr. Lawrence Blair, who researched a fellow by the name of John Chang, who can set newspaper on fire with his bare hands, among other things. He can light an electric bulb with his fingers. And if people go to my website, I've actually got the video of him doing these things. And this is legitimate. This is not some, you know, hoax or anything like that. I talked with Steven Snyder, who was Stevie Wonder's principal piano technician. And he was deaf at a very early age, and he learned to see into hyperspace. And he has his own way of tickling his amygdala. And all these different people, what they indicated to me was, number one, that they were, in fact, tickling their amygdala. Some of them consciously doing it. One woman, Michelle McCoskey, friends with Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Bill Gates, and her team was responsible for creating the very first software used on the first home Apple and home PC computers. And she started her own amygdala tickling group 15 years ago. So she has her own way of doing it. So what I came up with was 52 different ways to tickle your amygdala. And the big discovery for me really was that there's not just one way to do it. There's many, many different ways. The way that you do it will may be different from the way that somebody else does it, but it may be the same also. So I came up with 52 ways that you can tickle your amygdala. Sometimes it will turn on your creativity. Sometimes it will turn on paranormal abilities. It always turns on what I call brain radar. And brain radar is the ability to be at the right place at the right time with the right solution. That's what your infinity mind motor is capable of doing, this wonderful ability of brain radar. And I even named amygdala tickle exercise number 20. I call it George Norrie's frontal lobes recipe.
Oh, great.
You want to hear that?
I guess so.
Okay, one, and you'll understand why I call it this, because this was derived from our wonderful interview, which I have in its entirety in the book. So people can sit in on all these conversations. I'll read it for you. It's very short. Be prepared, it says. Start with a recipe list of ingredients. Make a list and write it all down on paper. Stick it up on your refrigerator to remind you till you get it made. Step one, decide what you want to cook up. Step two, decide what you need to prepare and have in place. Step three, go through the list one item at a time and obtain and prepare. Do you see how it's like we're cooking something up? It's
yep.
A recipe. Four, now you'll love this. Put it in the oven and, like a cake baking, let it do its thing and don't keep poking it every 5 minutes to see if it's done.
Perfect. You know, that's my philosophy.
It's right from you, George. This is what I learned from every one of these 56 incredible people. Some of these people are very famous, like Terry Jones, one of the founding members of Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Yeah.
I talked with him. I talked with Josh Blue, you know, the winner of Last Comic Standing.
Okay.
Josh
sure.
Blue, we had a wonderful conversation, and he explained how he tickled his amygdala when they locked him in a gorilla cage as a zookeeper in Africa. And people can actually go to the website and listen to him describe it himself. Stephen, I even have a little few words from Frank Zappa that I remembered when I met Frank many, many years ago when he was still alive. So each of these people teach us something about the human brain, and in this book specifically, how to tickle the amygdala. Now, for example, Stephen Snyder, I'll explain. Stephen was Stephen is a piano technician, which means he tunes and regulates pianos. And not only did he work for Stevie Wonder, who picked him out of hundreds of piano tuners all over the world, but Stephen also tuned all of the pianos for the biggest recording studios in New York City. Remarkably, he was completely deaf for the first 5 years of his life.
That is remarkable.
And during that period, he began to, since he had no sense of hearing, his sense of sight became hypersensitive, and he began to see into parallel realities, and he could see into hyperspace. And he explained to me, now he is one of these people who deliberately, he knows what amygdala tickling is, and he does it deliberately. He uses a tuning fork. He has a tuning fork, which he uses, which is tuned to 523 hertz, which you've probably heard of.
Yep.
And he holds the tuning fork to the side of his head, right where his amygdala is, on the left and on the right side, and then he holds it onto his frontal lobes. And by doing that, he says, that activates his amygdala and tickles it forward. And not only does he do it, but I talked to another woman named Palma Lee Stevens, and she's been tickling her amygdala for 15 years. She is a transcriptionist for a neurosurgeon. So she is one person who knows if I'm full of crap or not, if I'm making all this brain stuff up. She says, no, Neil, I know you know what you're talking about. This is what she tells me. And she also uses a tuning fork. She, in fact, told me the other day she has 56 different tuning forks.
All different frequencies?
All different frequencies. And she finds that some activate her brain in different ways. So depending on how she wants to, you know, which part of her brain she wants to activate, she picks up a different tuning fork.
I love it.
So there's many, many different ways to tickle your amygdala. The main thing is, here is the marker. This is the one thing that will tell you if you are truly tickling your amygdala or not. If you can sustain and repeat over a long term the pleasurable positive feedback, then you're tickling your amygdala. If it's just a matter of you feel really good, but the next morning you wake up with a reality hangover, you ain't tickled your amygdala. You see the difference?
Yep, I sure do. Sure do. Let's take some calls here, Neil. Let's go to Tyson in Seven Hills, Ohio, on the wild card line. Hello, Tyson. Welcome.
Hello.
Hey.
I just wanted to ask your guest, have you ever done any sort of consulting or any work with the James Randi Foundation?
I am a bit familiar with James Randi, and I have found, just to be perfectly honest, that the criticism that he's made of many people who have demonstrated some psychic phenomenon, I think he's totally off base. And when I had tried to have a discussion on one of his forums, I just met with just ridiculous. It was.
Did you get attacked?
Yeah, I just got attacked. It was just, and people would just come out and say things that were totally baseless. And he makes a thing of saying. Nobody's ever proven that there's such a thing as psychic phenomenon or whatever. Listen, I got a broom in my house that flies off my wall a couple times a year. And I've been in the room when it's happened, and my wife has been in the room when it's happened. So you can't tell me there's no such thing as psychic phenomenon. And the people that I've mentioned earlier in the show, such as Robert Vandenbroek, who does this amazing photo phenomenon, I've got the original videotape. I know what's going on there. I know that there's no hoax. I know that John Chang, when he is setting newspaper on fire with his bare hands, I know personally Dr. Lawrence Blair these people are beyond reproach. So I don't, you know, I know there are hoaxers out there. I know there are fakes out there, but I also know there are legitimate examples of psychic phenomenon. In fact, in my book, I give one reference of a list of 120 laboratory scientifically investigated psychic phenomenon. I mean, you have the Institute of Noetic Sciences that is run by an ex-astronaut.
Edgar Mitchell.
Absolutely. There is so much overwhelming evidence for, you know, Roger, you know, for real psychic phenomenon. Anybody who says there's no such thing, they don't know what they're talking about. I'm sorry.
Okay, Tyson, thanks for your call. Dayton, Ohio, another call. Let's go east of the Rockies. Jeff, take it away.
Hey, thank you. Thank
sure
you,
thing.
George. And Mr. Slade, what I'd like to know, you mentioned about the association of the blue flower and getting burned on the stove.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I have this painful neural association when it comes to, well, and I have a, this is two parts, by the way. Yeah, the first part, I have a painful neural association with writing, you know, because of the way, you know, it was presented to me, I guess you could say. I'm not going to go into the details, but the thing is, I'd like to be able to write more, but, you know, I just don't have the motivation because, you know, I do recall painful experiences in the past about it. So with that, how would you overcome those associations, as with any skill you want to try to improve on that has that negative weight attached?
Sure. Well, we're all different. We're not all meant to do the same thing as everybody else. Now, what immediately came to mind was a student of mine, Bobby Reginelli, who has a degree in journalism, and he would like to write, but he has a lot of difficulty sitting in one place at one time, right? For me, I can sit in front of my computer and type for 6 hours. No big deal.
You can
right?
go on and on and on.
And he would like to write, but it's difficult for him. So you know what he discovered? He has one of these new, and this is not meant to be a commercial. What I'm just trying to illustrate is there's always, you know, there's different ways to get to the same place, right? You don't necessarily have to do something the same way as somebody else. He has an iPhone, and he talks into the iPhone, and it writes down what he's saying.
Oh, yeah, that's great programs,
right?
Now.
It's like there's another program called Dragon, Naturally Speaking, you know, right? I can type faster than I could use a program like that. But for Bobby, it's perfect. And so what if there's some spelling errors? You know, anybody who's reading it's going to understand. So you can use something like that to just walk around the neighborhood and talk and accomplish it that way. The other thing that you can think about is you can retrain yourself. You can retrain your amygdala to positively respond to where you might have negatively responded. See, you've learned a negative response, right? So you want to relearn a positive response. So one of my amygdala tickling exercises in the book is to start with small bites. Okay, imagine you're going to eat a peanut butter sandwich. Well, you wouldn't eat it in one bite. You take one little bite and you chew it up, right? And then you take another bite. And before you know it, you got the whole sandwich eaten, right? So if you want to write and you want to establish a positive feedback mechanism to bloom, sit down and write a paragraph and then reward yourself for that, right? And then go off and do something else. And then come back a little and maybe write another paragraph and reward yourself. Pat yourself on the back. Eat a brownie. Have a lick of ice cream or, you know, watch a TV show or something, right? And you very slowly, in the same way that you would learn to, you would do weight training, right? You don't start with a 100-pound weight. You start with a 5-pound weight. And you do that for a little bit, right? And then you do 10 pounds and then 20. You follow what I'm saying?
Some people, Neil, work better under pressure. Their brains kick in. Why is that?
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of that way, too, myself, sometimes. Sometimes I like to just kind of relax, but sometimes it takes a deadline. you know.
Pressure, something.
Yeah, you know, fear isn't, and I was talking with a psychiatrist at the Depression Center at the University of Colorado, Dr. Cheryl Chesick, and we had a long talk about amygdala and frontal lobes and all that, and she says, you know, and we were talking about the reptile brain and fear, and she says, you know, don't dismiss your fear. Your fear has a function. You need to have, there, sometimes negative emotion has a positive role. And sometimes we need to have that kind of that little bit of prodding to get us going in the right direction. You don't want to be addicted to it. You don't want to be dependent upon it. But when it comes along, embrace it and recognize it and use it and judo flip it. You see, you can take a lemon and turn it into lemonade. And that's what your frontal lobes do. That's why it's important to learn what the frontal lobes do, because the frontal lobes can take any lemon and turn it into lemonade.
How did you get fascinated with brain?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think, you know, I just graduated and I had gotten my degree in music.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was this negative reinforcement, because I just spent a year substitute teaching, and I knew there had to be something better than that for me. So I thought, I've got to really learn what's going on inside my brain. And so I saw this fellow, T.D. Lingo, who ran a brain and behavior modification laboratory, and I wrote to him, and he was a musician. And he established himself and not only made a career in music, but then went into a career in brain and behavior science. So for me, it was kind of one of these, you know, negative kind of impetuses or whatever that you're talking about. But it was also a curiosity. I've always wanted to learn a better way of doing something. I'm always interested in music and art and that creativity. I want to know where creativity comes from. And I'm also very, very interested in paranormal. And I wanted to know, what's phone calls from the dead all about? You know, why is my broom flying off my wall? How did my dogs reincarnate? You know, so those kind of things. I mean, the brain is where it's at. You know, in this lifetime, you can discard practically, you can divulge yourself of everything. You can divulge yourself of material wealth, of most physical wealth. You can lose an arm, a leg. You can lose your hearing. You can lose your sight. But the one thing you can't lose is your brain.
That's right. Neil, stay with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Neil Slade in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with, again, the split show, because next hour we're going live to the United Kingdom, telephone calls from the dead with Cal Cooper on Coast to Coast AM. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. We'll be right back. If you're in the greater Los Angeles area this Saturday night, I've got a book signing, full information for you. It's going to be in Venice, California, full information on our coasttocoastam.com website. Scroll down, click calendar, and there you are. Come on by. I'll be there from 7 to 9 o'clock. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you and Neil Slade. This will be our final segment of Phone Calls with Neil. Tickle your amygdala. Neil, the book itself, where do you get it?
Go to brainradar.com or go to Amazon. And if you can't spell amygdala, go to brainradar.com. Most people can spell brain radar. Or you can look up Neil Slade on Amazon and get it there. But you can get a printed version, or we also have a Kindle and a Nook version. One thing that I just completed last week is an 80-minute audio CD. So if you buy the book, you get not only the book, but you get an 80-minute audio CD, and you can hear me talking with Terry Jones and Josh Blue and Michelle McCoskey and Steven Snyder and a couple other people. And there's also some practical things on the audio CD, and it's funny too. There's some great music, and there's some funny stuff on there as well. So that's where you get it.
How long does it take you to train your amygdala?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I first went to the brain lab where I first heard about the amygdala in 1982. And I would say that I had results that began very early on. And most people do report as soon as they learn a couple of different ways to tickle their amygdala. Sometimes it's just the imagining a feather inside the head, tickling that brain part will do it. Sometimes people can use their Tom Myers is an osteopath in Belgium who tickles his amygdala, and he does it on his patients as well. And what he discovered is something as simple as just taking the palm of your hand and placing it on the side of the temple, that pleasurable sensation will begin to send that current forward into the frontal lobes and backward into the pleasurable responses of the amygdala. So it can happen very quickly. There is a phenomenon that is called popping your frontal lobes. And this occurs to people after they've established a pattern of daily amygdala tickling. You know, if you're at the grocery store, you can tickle your amygdala, or you're taking a walk around the block, or you go to the bank, or, you know, just in daily activities, you just make a routine, you tickle here, you tickle there, no big thing. One day, this thing happens, and we call it popping your frontal lobes, and it's this eureka moment. It's when all the pieces fit together. It's when you solve a riddle that you've been trying to figure out the solution for the longest time. And it usually happens when you're not even thinking about it, right? When you're relaxed, when you're in that relaxed state, right? When you're not concerned, and you just, it's like your solution that you've been looking for is like the last thing from your mind. All of a sudden, a big light bulb goes off. And for me, that took about 6 years before the big light bulb went off. I've been tickling every day, and I've been having all these nice things, but then there's this peak phenomenon, this frontal lobes pop, and it's like, it's the best feeling that you ever had. And you know, all the religions in the world usually have a name for this kind of experience, medicine vision, born again, samadhi, kensho, right? Everybody knows what I'm talking about.
That's right.
The thing is, if you understand what amygdala tickling is, right, and you do it every day, eventually this thing, it's not going to be an accident. This is what people report. I've been doing it, and all of a sudden one day the big light bulb went off, and I got it, and I solved that problem, or I got to that place that I was trying to reach for all that time. So that may take a while, but for most people, results from amygdala tickling happen usually as soon as they start doing it in whatever way that they tickle their amygdala. And you know, it's different for everybody's an individual. Some people will respond quicker than other people. Some people will respond to George Norrie's frontal lobes recipe, mm-hmm. But they won't respond to the feather tickling. Other people might not respond to the frontal lobes recipe, but they'll respond to. So it's kind of an experimental thing. You just try this and you try this. So in the book, there's 52 suggestions, you know, that you can try, and one of those is sure to work, and you're going to come up with some of your own as well.
All right, let's go to the final calls. We'll go to Sunnyside, Washington, west of the Rockies. Bob, hello.
Hello, George. Tell you what, buddy, it's great to speak with you. Quite an honor. I have been, 40 years on the road, and I think I'm probably one of Art Bell's first listeners.
Super.
And I'm going to try to keep this short. I could talk to you guys on this for a couple hours. But, Neil, in 99, I had occasion to speak with a well-renowned psychic in our area, Reverend David Akins in the Boise area. He just cut me off. I was calling because my father, I'd been taking care of my father and he'd passed, and I was home and back to work. And I called about my subject, and then all of a sudden, David went off about, well, who's Sandy? Well, that's my wife. She's 200 miles away, and he said we were connected. To make a long story short, he described these, at that time it was like 30-some years of trucking. He said, you see, you're very psychic. You see accidents and so forth and police. Well, after 40 years, Neil, I've never had a ticket or an accident.
You truly have brain radar.
Yes, and what you're subject to, really, you know, I've listened all these years, and I didn't want to bother anybody or call in. I've just enjoyed George and Art and everybody so much, but you really got me going. One quick, in 1974, as a very young man, trucking, and I came across the bridge around the corner, and I just got this blast. I don't know how to describe it. And I actually just shut that truck down. And when the truck stopped with this 80,000-pound load, I had teenagers laying in the road in front of me,
yeah,
around a blind corner. So I couldn't dispute what David had told me. And you, when you were talking about psychics, I got to tell people, you know, I'm old-fashioned, and these kind of things are hard for me to believe. But this guy described to me past people, family members who moved on, and he described them and named them without any information. So I just wish I could, you know, I know I've benefited over the 40-year period. I wish I could somehow tie the two things together and actually learn how to make better use out of it, I guess, Neil.
Sure. Well, that's always been my goal, is to put this in terms that you could teach a first grader. You know, that's why I said it was so important for me to find one word that would describe the function of the amygdala, that it's your master compass, to make it really simple for everyone to understand. And let me explain something about paranormal abilities, because you brought up something very important. There are a few people out there who can call upon these extrasensory paranormal abilities at will, such as the John Chang and Robert Vandenbroek and the gentleman that you were talking about. Most of us don't have that ability, and we probably won't ever have that ability to call upon it at will, like turning a faucet on and on. But what I have noticed is that people who understand what the amygdala is, how to tickle it, and who understand what the frontal lobes do as opposed to the reptilian brain reaction, if you can stay in your frontal lobes, right, when you need these paranormal perceptions to occur, when they are truly needed, not just a parlor game or a trick to impress your friends, then you get them. You get these extrasensory abilities when they're really needed, and then they're on and then they're off. And you described that type of situation, there was some intuitive sense in you, some higher perceptual ability. When it was really necessary, you were able to have that turned on. And as you understand how to tickle your amygdala, you find that you can, that those types of necessary abilities that are go beyond your simple senses, you can depend on them. They'll turn on when you really need them. And just the opposite is true. If you cannot stay in your frontal lobes, and if you are constantly in this reptilian
mode,
counterattack, yeah, mode, they'll never turn on. It'll be just like you've got a bag over your head. And that's what paranormal abilities are. Their ability to see beyond yourself.
Neil, would you say a person who's relatively docile compared to someone who's crazed and hyper? that their amygdalas are different?
That's a very interesting question. And I spoke with Dr. Robert Newman, who is the head neurosurgeon at the University of Colorado Health Center, also about this. And he pointed out something very interesting. He said, we find that the brain works the best when it's neither overstimulated nor understimulated, and that there's like a bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
When there's too little activity, your brain doesn't function very well. But when you have hyperstimulation, your brain also doesn't work very well. So what you're striving for is this kind of happy medium where you're not overstimulated, but you're not understimulated either, right? And that's where your brain operates the best and when it's most efficient.
All right, next up, let's go to Oahu in Hawaii. Mata Hari's with us. Hi there.
Aloha no, guys.
Aloha.
Aloha no. Okay. This amygdala you're talking about with regards to the babies, is that what's the source of the moral reflex in them?
The source of the... state that again. I want to make sure I know what you're talking.
Is the actions of the amygdala the source of that moral reflex? You know, when you make a loud sound, they put out their arms and their legs from fear of falling through the trees or something like that.
Oh, well... I don't know what you know what I did. I thought you said the word moral, like
morals, yeah.
M-O-R-A-L.
That's what I did too.
Babies. Now you were asking about a baby's reaction, correct?
Yeah.
I do know this, and my teacher, my brain mentor, told me this decades ago. He said, infants and babies are born with their amygdala clicked forward. Babies are naturally happy beings. They are naturally cooperative beings. They do have some self-centered types of things that run their circuitry, but as a rule, they're open. Their circuitry is wide open. They embrace the universe. And it's only as we become older and culturally conditioned and socially conditioned that we learn to be fearful of many things. And as we learn that we shouldn't do this and we shouldn't do that, and you're bad because you like to wear different colored socks on each foot, and you're bad because your hair looks different than the way it is in the magazine, right? We're culturally conditioned to become more and more closed off, and we click further and further and further back into our reptilian defense modes. And as we do that, not only as we become more defensive, we shut off our access to the infinite information that's in the universe. And we shut off ourselves to the abundance that's out in the universe waiting to be given to us. So babies start out with going in the right direction. And as teachers and adults and parents, it's our job to make sure that we don't teach our children to be clicked backward into me, 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 and rather that they remain open to cooperative and collective intelligence.
All right, we've got time for a couple more. Let's go to Austin in Las Vegas, Nevada, Wildcard Line. Hey, Austin.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Hi.
Great.
I just had a few questions, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answers.
Okay.
I just wanted to know if I'll be able to ever tickle my amygdala again because of a post-traumatic stress disorder. I feel like I can't, and I just wanted to know if that's possible to stimulate that again. And also, I'm a big fan of yours, and I wanted to know if you wrote also the book by the same name of author, Easy How to Paint a Car.
As a matter of fact, yes, to both.
About that?
First of all, let me address the first question, then I'll give you a very short answer to how to take your car.
Go ahead.
The T.D. Lingo, who was my mentor, who ran the Brain Lab, he was a soldier during World War II. And one of his primary reasons for setting up his brain research was to discover what goes on in the minds of soldiers before and after a war. And he had many people who came through the Brain Lab who were very traumatized. Not only soldiers, but he had many, many people over 2 decades of work that came specifically to overcome traumatic incidences in their lives. And so the short and quick answer to your question is absolutely. And the key to doing that is just to learn what your amygdala does, learn the difference between your frontal lobes and your reptile brain, and then you learn creative ways to reset the trauma memories. There's an exercise in a book that I wrote called The Frontal Lobe Supercharged called Mind Movie Rewrite, and that's specifically designed to reprogram and replace traumatic memories with pleasant memories. And so there's a method for doing that, which is explained in my books, and the absolute answer to that question is yes. Now, the second question was I the guy who wrote Easy Paint Your Car? Yes, and I'll tell you very quickly because it's
30 seconds, Neil.
Yeah. I painted my car because it was something that I enjoyed doing, and I made a video, and I found that people were very interested in doing it. As it turned out, it was a very popular book that I wrote. And it was just a natural outgrowth for me doing something that I enjoyed. And that's important because everyone can find something that they enjoy doing and they can benefit from that. And often it may come from something that you never expected it to. In a million years, I never expected to have a huge best-selling book on how to paint your car. And it just fell into my lap because I just did something that I enjoyed to do.
Tickle Your Amygdala by Neil Slade. You can get all that information at coasttocoastam.com. And when we come back in a moment, we're going live to the United Kingdom. Cal Cooper joins us with telephone calls from the dead.